Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. And today is Friday, January the 31st, 2014, and we welcome you to the show. And by the way, we forgot to announce yesterday that we hit our third anniversary yesterday for being on the show and doing this. That's awesome. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And today is Aramaic Friday with Dale Hoffman. And first, let's welcome Michael Rice.
Thank you, dear heart. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. We're honored. We're privileged to get to share this information and to continue the exploration of the ancient Aramaic understanding of how the world works, how the mind works, how emotions work, how these laws, that is, these eternal forces move in our world, and how to get to really, truly understand how they work. Because, of course, everybody that's listening to the show has got a human device. And like any other device, if you haven't been trained, if you don't know how it works, you know, it leads to problems. It just doesn't seem to work very well. And so you look at the drama and trauma. You look at the insanity that goes on in our world, and it's just time for a wake-up. So we're here to operate that wake-up and to support every mind, heart, and being on the planet, understanding exactly how they operate, understanding exactly how these eternal forces operate within and through and around them, and coming out the other side as conscious operators of their own form and of their own lives. And probably one of the greatest atrocities done to us as human beings down through the ages is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. We bought into that, and if you bought into that, then having subverted the fact that you are a creator, having lost contact with that fact, when things show up in your life and kick you in the limitation, the tendency is to say, why are they doing this to me again? When the truth is, as a creator, and of course everybody loves the idea of being a creator when things are going well. Oh, look what I've done, isn't this awesome? But when it's not going so well, don't we always know who the problem is? And, you know, I'm gonna do a little psychic thing here. I'm going to tune in. Who's the problem? Who's the one that needs to change for the thing that's currently going on in your life to be better? Let me tune. Is it by any chance them? That's the belief of the world, and that's an insane world. We're here to support you reclaiming your creatorship, and we're delighted that you're with us, and I believe that we have Dale Allen Hoffman on the phone. So, Dale, I am delighted that you're here. We welcome you. It's our final Friday in January. I think this is, what, the fourth or third time that we've done a month of Fridays for Aramaic Friday. And everybody, the feedback I've been getting has just been awesome, and everybody feels awesomely blessed by your presence on the show. So thank you.
I think it's the third, but it may be the fourth. Dr. Tim usually keeps better track of that stuff than I do, so maybe you should ask him how many. I think it's three.
Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see if he's got anything to share with us or any particular questions. I know he's been with the support group focusing a lot on the Aramaic and bringing that forward at a new level in the support group. So, Dr. Kim, are you there, sir?
I am.
Awesome. Do you have anything to share with us? Any exciting insights or any particular questions for Dale?
Well, I believe this is our third round, although Magda is our real librarian for the show, Magda and Sue. But the thing I would add is not really related to the Aramaic business, but from our support group on Tuesday, there was an example where someone was using the commitment tool and the Who Am I Am Somebody card with their three-year-old. And
right.
In the middle of one of the worst days she's had since the last 6 months she's been coming to the group, she made her three-year-old sit quietly in a chair and just watch her and not touch what she was doing. And the three-year-old was just itching to go over and touch what she was doing. And she sat there working on her project thinking she's a horrible parent because she was being so mean to her three-year-old. And all of a sudden, the three-year-old burst out and said, I am somebody.
Wow.
So my offering is just as Dale frequently talks about in his talks, that he mentions his children from time to time. And the blessing of introducing people to this as young as possible, that's my offering for this for today. And then just let you guys kick it off and get into the Aramaic business just as young as possible.
It is awesome, isn't it? And by the way, we're just getting ready, actually, to send off to the publisher, hopefully within the next 10 days or so, a new edit. Julie's done quite a bit of editing on her book, Healing Children, Loving Children, where the back cover is the I Am Somebody. And you can go to the website. You can download that freely. Go to www.whyagain.org. And instead of the kind of language that our culture teaches of don't do this, you're bad, you'll never, instead of playing that game with children, teach them they are somebody, that they are love, and watch them bloom and watch them blossom. So, Julie, we appreciate you for the way that you took all of the work and kind of massaged it to the level where the kindergarten child, the 2-, 3-, 4-year-old can start to understand. And in her book, she's got age-appropriate language, introduced the tool at the age of 4. Then when they get to 5, here's the new ideas to, and at 6. So she's got, I think, 7 different worksheets, starting right out at the very basic. And we've, Julie did do an intensive at Heartland 1 year. Maybe we'll get her to do that again at some point. And there was a 4-year-old boy there, and there was some fuss before we went to lunch. And we went back into the kitchen to put lunch together, came back out, and his 9-year-old sister was helping him to do a worksheet. It's pretty awesome. So thank you, Julie, for that. And if anybody wants to order Healing Children, Loving Children, you can go to our website. And as I say, the new version will be going to the printer probably within the next 10 days or so. So that's awesome. And by the way, Jeannie, bringing up the fact that yesterday we missed our third anniversary, that means that there are approximately, I don't know, 750 or so shows. You know, we've been doing it 52 weeks a year for 3 years, and I don't think we've missed one of the 5-day-a-week days, whether it was Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever. So all those archives are there. There's just a gold mine of information if you want to go listening and searching through. They're organized, many of them, by topic, and some of the topics we've covered have been just absolutely phenomenal. So you can go to, again, whyagain.org and look at the radio show and archives, and you can start downloading those in MP3s and listening. So we're actually looking at getting ready to take some of those shows and organize them into DVDs and making them available. But anyway, so Dale.
Sir.
What do you have on your mind today, sir?
Well, I got to say, first of all, 3 years, 5 days a week, that's a commitment.
It's a commitment. It's been fun, and thank God for some of our friends.
Well, you know, I never doubted your commitment even before that, but it's big. It's a big commitment, and really for the healing of this planet and beyond in a lot of ways. It's been an honor for me to be a part of it at this point. You know, we were speaking of teaching the kids the Aramaic forgiveness tools, and I'll say that I'm a little bit with Mikey, my 12-year-old, but right beside the English with Shamaya, our youngest, who's going to be 3 in May, I've been laying out the Aramaic, the Ashuri.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's the Ashuri, which is Aramaic, Hebrew. It covers both the letter writing and starting to work with those letters, and going to start basic with letters and then go to numbers, and then along with Steve Caruso, who's the preeminent Galilean Aramaic knowledge guy on the planet. That's the actual dialect that would have been spoken in that region in the first century. He's doing the same with his kids, so I'm kind of mirroring that, and it'll be kind of neat to see how she grows up with 2 languages, including one language that's 2,000 years old, that particular dialect is really close to basically being what people would call dead. It's funny, people think Aramaic is dead, and it's like you might want to check your – I hear that all the time. Oh, yeah, it's a dead language. It's like, well then you might want to define dead, because there's actually quite a few people still speaking at least forms of it today. So I'm excited about that with Shamaya. And it's funny, too, after you have 2 children and then there's a space and then you have chance for 1 more, after you've become a bit more conscious and understand the parenting process a bit more and forgiveness, it's been quite a different experience raising Shamaya at this point, especially now that she's into the, let's just call them her beautiful 2s and leave it at that. But yeah, her energy is through the roof. And it's been interesting to be able to be conscious enough to know that when I'm about to launch off to catch it before it happens and realize that, hey, guess what? It's not her. It's in me. And she's just triggering it. And she's quite a talented trigger, I'll just say, catalyst. So it's a beautiful process. Like you used to say to me that, you know, whatever you haven't dealt with, your children are going to give it right back to you, show it to you in, you know, living color and full Dolby sound. And I'll say it's, you know, probably Blu-ray quality, if not beyond, and on sound it's 5.1 surround sound, if not more, because it's quite a learning process, and it's really beautiful. And it's one thing to be out there talking about it. It's another thing to actually live it.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Shamaya has the leaning and the purpose of a scholar in the Aramaic world, because if you're raising a young one in that language and that's her purpose, if that fits for her, it would be pretty awesome to see how she will touch the world, the seeds that you're sowing, the tools that you're sharing with her, and what she might do with it if that's her the purpose she came in with. And from everything you've told me, it sounds like it very well might be.
It's exciting. I mean, when she was born, there was no amount of English sort of there. None of that seemed to really do much. Like when she was first born, she was very still. She was born in the call with the veil over her face in her full amniotic sac, which had broken but not ruptured to the point where it had fallen apart. It was still surrounding her when she came out, large portions of it. And she was just completely quiet, and they got the stuff out of her nose and her mouth, and still very quiet. And as soon as maybe, like, give her right to Loretta, as soon as the nurses took her a few minutes later, she immediately starts screaming and screeching. There's no amount of English. And then I said a few things to her in English, you know, not no big deal. And then I leaned over, and I just started speaking the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic to her. And she locked right on my eyes. I'd never had that experience before with Mikey and Lucinda, you know, 10, 12, 12 and 14 years ago. It was like, you know, it took a few weeks for them to have that focus. And I've been hearing about a lot of kids that have been born that have that kind of focus really early on. And it's still, if she's upset, one of the things I'll often do is just hold her against myself and breathe deeply and do a little bit of like toning, a little bit of Aramaic toning. And she just completely centers. There's something, some sort of resonance. So without wanting to obviously force anything on her, if it's why she's here. It should be, you know, quite obvious at some point, and it's exciting. But even if that specific thing is not her, what her earthly purpose is, I'm excited just to give her the base of it. And as I've been doing a little bit with, more with Mikey than Lucinda. Lucinda's 14. She's sort of in the talk to the hand phase right now, so it's a little different.
Uh-huh. All right. You mean she's giving you opportunities to learn forgiveness, too. How cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah, so. And it's amazing, too. I mean, Lucinda is exactly like me. What that means is that she's hyper-intelligent. She's able to kind of, if she's got a vision, then, and something sort of, there's a roadblock in the way, she's very adept at recalculating and getting around, you know, around, and now what we're doing is working with her on getting through it rather than going around it. So actually processing it so that the same roadblocks don't keep popping up over and over and over again. It's a different way of looking at life in terms of the normal way that we have today, which is so schizophrenic and bizarre, actually, the way things have become. It's interesting to see kids when the light bulb goes off in a situation where they would have gone completely haywire, to be able to catch it in the moment and take a step back and take a breath and say, hey, wait a second here. Yeah, I have a choice in how I can either react or respond with this situation. And it's amazing to see your own children take the step back and catch it before it happens. And then after a while, they've done so much processing that it stops happening. The catalyst doesn't seem to do it anymore. So that's the beautiful thing. Same trigger, no reaction whatsoever in that kind of way. It's like they're looking at you and there's just nothing to rub, you know, no button to push. It's amazing to see it in your own kids.
Well, the last 3 days on the show, I presented some new writing that I've just completed on blockage of truth. So we actually took 3 days to cover it. And looking at the, from an observer's point of view, of what kind of states of mind and behaviors indicate that one's in blockage of truth, that the 9-bit mind is filled with something other than what the senses are bringing in, and that, of course, something that fills the 9-bit mind is the content of carbon-based memory, the generations. And so if she has the inclination, that might be a good place for her to start about the first 35 or 40 minutes of the show on Tuesday. And then Wednesday's show, we did another piece, the latter part of it. And then Thursday, we spent the better part of the day yesterday on blockage of truth and its effect. So if there's an inclination, then it might be worth listening to. Or even just if there isn't the inclination, you know, maybe downloading the MP3s, and I think, you know, from the past when I've been around your kids and such, that Lucinda and I have somewhat of a connection, and so maybe just hearing it, hearing my voice with it, just playing it in her environment, even if she's not paying attention, might help her to open that space and drop the hand and really let the people who cherish her in and support her.
I find that with anything very conscious, whether it's a something of yours that I've heard 1,000 times, Eckhart Tolle is another one where I can completely phase out and not hear a word he's saying for 30 minutes, and yet the presence, you know, the presence communicates. And that's the thing about, and I've mentioned it on the first show that we did this month, where I would come to one of your events, still, why again? I don't know how many dozens of times I've heard that. And, of course, it's always fresh and different, literally, from you. And, of course, I'm hearing different things each time. But I always sit in the back of the room, and I'm almost sitting on my hands because I want to leap up and yell, yes! It just completely lights me up. And it was like that the first time, and it's like that every time that I hear it, whether it's a DVD, CD, or live. It still lights me up. So.
Right. It's kind of interesting to hear somebody who's done the why. This happened to me again, we're stuck once, and they're invited again. They'll say, oh, I've already done that course. And it's like, right, okay. You've had the course. I mean, and, you know, people might say, well, Michael, you must be a slow learner. After 45 years of delving into and understanding, teaching this stuff, and we're probably going into about 35 years of the first worksheet that we put out in the first Y workshop. The brain styles are still coming fast and more urgently and deeper than at any other time in my years of doing this work. I get to comprehend it on a whole new level. So when somebody tells me they've already got it, it's like, okay. Or it's another fun thing is, oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, okay. I hear that one.
Okay.
A lot of people, what I'll sometimes hear is, I already know everything you're saying, but it's nice to hear it again. It's like, okay, that's nice.
Yeah. I get that all the time.
I just smile, and that's nice. That's good.
Yep,
so
yep.
It's not about hearing it, it's about living it. It's about putting it into practice, like you say, putting the pen to the paper. There's one, you know, aspect of the first two-thirds of the Y workshop is basically learning the tool, but the real, you know, tofu and potatoes is in the last third, which is putting the pen to the paper. And people go, oh, okay, hold on a second here. And then always watching, you know, usually very often the people that do it the first time getting stuck on that canceling the goal thing. They're like, all right, hold on a second here. Cancel what I want? What if it's positive? What if it's a good thing? That's definitely a common theme in it. So, and that's another thing, too. I think that's a part of when someone comes up and they're like, well, I've already heard all this before. You know, it's a beautiful telltale sign that they're not hearing it, that, in fact, there's some kind of previous framework. They're locking it right into something, you know, some sort of ideology that they've already got in the system. And rather than being able to have the eyes that see, the ears that hear, it's just a matter of, well, okay, yeah, yeah. But it's like, well, okay, do you live it? Do you actually put it into practice? That's one thing I get a lot from people. People tell me that they're very thankful that I just lay it all out, you know, my own, you know, issues or whatever it may be, and I'll put it out there. I'll talk about my family life, and I'll talk about things that a lot of people won't talk about, you know, in the need to find some sort of self-control over their image with people. And I'm like, if there's any image that I want to put across, it's that I'm real, that I'm actually doing this, and I'm actually living it and putting it into practice and letting people know, look, you know, I know right now you're right in the beginning of this, and this sounds like it's backwards. It feels anti-intuitive, but I want you to understand this is not anti-intuitive. This is anti-conditioning. This is about the stuff that you've been conditioned and the things that have been locked into your system, and the thing that feels off is not your gut level. The thing that feels off is the conditioning that was put in. You know, a great example is, I can't remember the name. I think it was Raw for 30 Days, the film that Gabriel Cousins did at Tree of Life. And
right,
they had all these different – yeah, there was all these people coming out for 30 Days of Raw, and there's one guy that kept saying, you know, I have to follow my gut. I have to follow my soul. And he ended up leaving, and bless his heart, he wasn't following his gut. He wasn't following his soul. He was following his conditioning. And
and that probably came from his gut, if you remember the size of him.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And, I mean, things were – yeah, I know it from Heartland, when it's not Dr. Feelgood. When you start, you've got those initial, oh, my God, great energy, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you wake up one morning, it's like you say, who got the number of the Mack truck that plowed over me in the middle of the night? Because all of a sudden you're face-to-face with yourself, and in direct proportion to your resistance, when it comes back out, it feels just like it did when it went in. Of course, willingness is the cosmic grease. And a lot of people, when they feel that, they think, oh, no, this is telling me I shouldn't be going here. And unfortunately, that's the thing that's created this insane, chaotic culture, is us being told not to go there when it's going there, you know, to what we really feel, what's really in our heart. That's the only way to keep it clean, high fidelity, and keep us moving forward in an evolutionary way, rather than throwing all these bushel baskets on top of the light. And it's one of the humps that, you know, I often see in my work, is people coming to terms with, all right, hold on a second, this isn't just going to feel like roses and sunshine. You know, it's like, hold on a second here. And some people just take off. Yeah, you know, I saw that at Heartland the first year I was there in 1995. I remember people just leaving and taking off. And I remember myself being on Raw Foods for 3 months, feeling better than I'd ever felt in my life, doing backbreaking work on the support team to keep the center going and trying to find trying to find plumbing lines on the property and just digging through rock with pickaxes, feeling amazing, and then going one day to Cookies on Bull Shoals Lake and having their pasta, which was basically like a salt feast. And I remember getting bloated immediately. And as soon as I put that, literally, I remember the first bite of that salty pasta dropping on my tongue. Actually, it wasn't the pasta; it was salad. I remember that the dressing hitting my tongue, and I remember a little bit of a lockdown. And then I remember when I put that pasta, as soon as I put it on, it was almost like I just went to sleep. And and it was one of those things. I fell into a clique of a few people that summer who just weren't really willing to do the work. They kind of got clicked together, and I could have got so much more out of my first experience there if I hadn't allowed myself to get into the clique. But then some of those people left, and you know, I really was able to focus, you know. But now I know that I had a choice of whether I wanted to fall into that conditioning pattern with others or not. And it was such an amazing, I'm still today, that was 1995, that was 19 years ago. Today I'm still comprehending and getting deeper layers of what happened in the summer of 1995 today, almost two decades later. It's still working through my system, and it's still expanding in my life. So even if that was it and I never had anything else, it would still be doing it. It's all about, like you say, it's about planting those seeds, and that's why the children are so important.
Absolutely. Well, I like that way. I've never thought of it that way, as opposed to being counterintuitive. It's counterconditioning. Is that a copyrighted idea? Can I use that?
Nothing is copyrighted because, I lose track of – that one came to me just in a talk one day. But, I mean, I often tell people, I'm like, all right, now I got to give credit for some of these jokes that I've used today. Some of them are Rocco Erico. Some are Michael Rice. Some are – maybe some Les Brown in there, maybe a little Eddie Izzard, maybe even some George Carlin, but I lose track of where it all comes from at some point. So, no, it's not copywritten yet, but now that you say that, I might look into trademarks, but no. I've used so much of your stuff.
One of the Aramaicisms that's my favorite, I've kind of coined a word there of Aramaicisms, but this doesn't quite fit into that definition, but one of the statements that to me holds so much, and it's actually was the title of a book that I started about 10 years ago.
The End of Suffering.
The End of Suffering. Mm-hmm. Originally it was entitled The 11 Most Important Words Ever Spoken by the Aramaic Yeshua. And ended up becoming the End of Suffering. And I've put it on the shelf because when I had an agent that was interested, after he heard that my book was self-published and we were at 80,000 copies, he was like, well, I want to publish your book. I want to be your representative. I was like, okay, well, here's my next book. And I sent him two chapters. And I can only imagine it was threatening to him as he read it, because he went from the most enthusiastic agent I have ever seen to where he would not talk to me. He never spoke to me again after he got those two chapters. He never returned a phone call. And I think it just threatened too much. But the 11 most important words ever spoken to me, or for me, are the word followed expression that Yeshua gave of what the first law was, where he says, you must have rachma for the Creator, for your neighbor, for anything you think about, in order to maintain self. And then the words that are important are, for upon this, and all its problems.
You kind of cut out.
Michael, you're cutting out. I started to say, I don't know if it's just me or if it's that way for everybody, but your words are really breaking up, and then that sentence was good.
Okay, that's better. All right. So the words that followed the first law have rachma for Creator, for neighbor, in order to maintain self. For upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. I'll never forget the summer that we were doing Laws of Living, and that just hit me on the head like a hammer. Ah, this is the protocol. Here's Yeshua telling us, before you ever look at the scriptures and try to make any logical sense of them, they hang upon the condition of love in your mind. If you're not coming to it with the condition of love, then you're going to distort and destroy it. And we've had so much distortion and destruction from scriptures. You know, there are many people who talk about the beloved King James Version of the Bible. And if you look at the guy who set up the rules and was the head of that translation project, this is a guy who just in short form, one piece of information, when there was a preacher that disagreed with him, he had the guy thrown in prison naked in an open cell, that is, there was no ceiling on it, and it was in the winter with rain and snow coming down on him, and left him there for 3 months, naked. And then, when it came time for a trial, the guy was so sick, he could not come to his own trial, and the sentence was that he was to have his nose split in two and be imprisoned for life. And so this is somebody who, if this is an example of Rachma, and we've got an accurate translation out of this guy, make mine vanilla.
Yeah.
But the importance of that. So I'd love for you to just take that whole statement from the beginning, the Rachma, talk a little bit about that from your studies and your perspective, the creator, neighbor, in order to maintain self, and then four upon this. I'd just love to hear your thoughts on it, Dale.
Well, you know, the two commandments, as they're often called, they show up in three different places. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's in slightly different forms in each of the three places. It also, in two cases, it's Jesus saying them, and of course he's being tested. He's being tested by a scribe, and in one of the three cases, it is actually Jesus saying, well, you know, you say it to me, how do you read it, essentially? And I'm looking, actually, let me see. So, yeah, it's in Mark that the scribe says it back to him. No, okay, it's the Gospel of Luke. In all three cases, it's basically the same things. It's basically the same words. It's just in one case the scribe says it to Jesus, and the other case it's Yeshua saying it back. He says, of course, in the most quoted version is probably the one from Matthew, and I've got it open right here in front of me just to make sure that I'm giving the information across perfectly. To love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and all of your strength. And so in Aramaic, what we've got is Detrachim Lamaria Allahach, to love the Lord your God. That's what it's translated as, Main Kula Lebach, with all your heart. Wa Main Kule Napshach, with all of your soul. Wa Main Kule Chaylach, with all of your strength. And Wa Main Kule Rayanach, with all of your mind. And one of the things that's most important about all these is that we have these modern translations that people just don't realize that when they're thinking of the Jesus teachings, they're not thinking of something that almost in any way resembles the 2,000-year-old system of understanding. They're actually understanding it from the Middle English King James perspective. Lord and all these words, Lord, verily, assuredly, these are all words that were never spoken back then. The reason I know that is because they didn't exist. So when looking at those, the first, love the Lord your God. When I hear that word God, what's important about the word Allah, I say this all the time, is that in Aramaic, God is not a power that's outside. God is not some kind of being that is separate from you in the clouds or anywhere. Like in a lot of New Thought teachings, I hear people say God is everywhere present. I'm like, okay, if God is everywhere present, what are you saying? They're like, well, there's no place that God is not. Okay, then you're saying, well, that everywhere you look, you're going to find God. Okay, what are you saying? What you're saying is God is all that exists. If you look at that word Allah in Aramaic, God is not something outside. God is not, if God is everywhere present, then God is everything. And that word, Allah in Aramaic, literally means the absolute only being, the oneness of everything. That, you know, even of all the universes and multiverses and cosmos, they're all part of one singular system of being, and there's nothing outside that being. So anything manifest or non-manifest, anything that can be thought of, comprehended, experienced, whatever, it's all God. And the it's like the two commandments don't work without the understanding that you are the one, whatever God is, I am. If you don't get that, then you have no chance of understanding what Yeshua said. And then he goes on the main kula, lebach, with all of your heart. Leba or liba is the word heart in Aramaic. Heart is that word, and we talked about it last week. It's the place where thought and feeling come together. It's like, look, I understand you say this, and you say you feel that, and you think that, but how do you really feel? What are you really thinking? Do you understand that your feelings are literally brought into being directly from your thoughts? That if your thoughts are in harmony with Rachma, or excuse me, with Rucha, with those eternal forces, if your thoughts are in harmony with that, then you have a life of harmony. If your thoughts are out of harmony with that, in with the hostility and the fear, then everything that you bring into being from your heart is going to be based in hostility and fear. Understand that. There's heart. The next one is all of your soul. Interesting, because that word soul in Greek is psyche, which means soul. So when you hear psychology, psychology, it originally meant the way of the soul. I think we really lost that one along the way. But that word soul, which Michael knows very well, is nafsha. Nafsha is, that's nefesh in Hebrew or nafs in Arabic. Nafsha, literal black and white translation, straight off the page in black and white, is breath of life. Love the one absolute only being of which you are an emanation, a part of, with all of your heart, your thought and feeling, with all of the breath of your life. And this next one's interesting. It says with all of your strength. Now that word strength in Aramaic, chayla or chaylach. Chaya is the word when Yeshua said, I come to give you life and give it abundantly. That word life is chaya. The word for temple, he called our body the temple. He called it the haikla, which means literally a gathering of energy. The word for church or sanctuary, one of the words is haikla, temple. That word chaya literally means conscious life energy. I come to give you conscious life energy and give it to you in abundance. Really what he's saying is I come to reveal, not give, but I come to reveal, to add unto your comprehension of the realization of the conscious life energy that literally expands and courses through you. Now, when you hear that word chaylach, we think of it in modern terms of strength, in terms of hold on, like hold on to Jesus. Here's the problem with holding on to Jesus. Number one, 99.9% of the people, bless their hearts, who spout different things about Jesus, have never met Jesus before. I know they're having what they feel are profound, deep, loving experiences. And I'm not saying they can't have them. What I am saying is what's actually there in the earliest writings, and that even includes in some of the Greek, is so completely different from the way we understand those teachings today. And I'm telling them, look, all I'm saying is I understand you feel great. You think that's great. I'm not challenging that. What I'm saying is listen to what I want to share with you. I just want to show you a different way of looking at this that's 2,000 years old, much closer to the source rather than only 400 years old from that King James understanding. So that word chaylach, though, it doesn't necessarily mean a strength with which you hold on. And here's the thing I'll say. Yeshua, these teachings are from an avatar. These are not normal, everyday spiritual teachings. The guys that sell dozens of, you know, different books over the past couple decades, a lot of good stuff. This is avatar teaching. This is very incredibly conscious. No avatar or conscious teacher would ever tell us to hold on to anything. All true teachers would say to let go. Holding on is, number one, it reveals a lack of faith. And faith isn't something where you have faith in some future event. That's a modern thing. It's a dualistic idea. Faith actually means living from the rooted center of your being. He's telling them, look, when you come from the root of your being, you're coming from that center, from Hylak, from the conscious life energy. You don't need to hold on because life lives you, because there's nothing that can hurt you. There's nothing to fear. There's nothing to be in hate or hostility about. That Hylak, what it really means in Aramaic, is a virtue and a willingness. It means a willingness to be conscious enough to have so much life pouring through you that you're actually able to let go of your own human strength with a small lowercase s, so that strength itself can birth through you. It's not about holding on, because, again, you're just holding on to ideologies. It's about letting go and letting life live you. And then in that last one, Rayanak, is mind. And mind comes right back to where heart is. Mind is, we think of mind and we immediately point to our head. Now that Rayanak in Aramaic, or the Raya is an interesting word, because Raya is also a word that's used for shepherd. It's a place of gathering. It's a place where everything comes together, the place where everything comes into either a point of coherence or incoherence, which is a very interesting thought. He said, I am the Tuv shepherd. I am the ripe shepherd. Ripe means fully present in this moment. So it's love, the one absolute being of which I am an emanation and a part of, with all of my heart, my thoughts, and my feelings, with all of the breath of my life, to let go, just completely let go and allow the strength of the one to birth through me, and to allow my mind energy, is probably the best way that we can put that, come into a place of coherence. Rather than trying to think perfect thoughts, let go of your thoughts and let life think through you. That's the only true perfect thought that comes through. And then he goes and he says, the second that is like it is you should love your neighbor as yourself. Now, one little piece here is that he says that is like it. That word that is like it in Aramaic is dama. Dama is the root of the word adam, adamos. It means red clay, it means earth, and it also means blood. And what blood really means is this is essence. It means blood, juice, wine, sap, or essence. In other words, the second law is the essence of the first. It's exactly, basically, it's an exact reflection of the first, and that's love your neighbor as yourself. Detrachim lekerabak aik napshach. Now, love, of course, is the word detrachim. Rahim is rachma, and rachma is the first sound there is Ra. Ra is a Coptic sound that means a shining forth of heat and light. The Hum sound in the middle of Rachma, and this is just a finger pointing at the moon. Rachma is something I can't really put into words in English. The Hum is the inner spiritual womb. It's the center point of the being, the center point of the body. When you come from the center, and then the Ma sound is a word that means birth. It means mother. It means to birth that forth with your neighbor. Now, that word neighbor, carob, in this case, carabach, which means your neighbor, the cuss sound at the end, carob means anybody that you think about. Specifically, actually, in truth, it means any object of your attention. So that means your neighbor is not only a person that you think about, whether they're alive, dead, unborn, a historical figure, or somebody sitting right beside you. It means anyone you think of, but what it actually means in Aramaic is any object of your attention. So your neighbor is not only a human, your neighbor is also an animal that lays beside you. Your neighbor is the air that you breathe into your lungs. Your neighbor is Mother Earth and the trees and the water and the environment. So this takes love your neighbor to a whole new level, because what he was actually saying was love anything that you perceive to be outside of you as one with you. The reason he said that is because it is one with you. There's nothing outside of the one. And then it ends with as your breath of life, your napsha. Love any object of your attention as the breath of your own life. Sit with it. I love how Albert LeChant says that the very ultra-conservative Orthodox Christian idea of that we somehow control the earth and we can rape and pillage it because God put it here for us to just destroy and use up in any way that we feel. Number one, that word that was translated as that we have dominion, that word means stewardship, which means conscious caretakers. But the idea that we can somehow rape and pillage the earth and other people and humans is the equivalent of moral leprosy, that somehow I can hurt someone, what I feel is outside of me, and it doesn't hurt me. But like you say, I get the real. I get the actual direct experience. All they're getting is a carbon copy. And in a lot of cases, I can project hostility and fear, and they're not even there to receive the call because they didn't even realize it. So it's me walking around with all that hatred. It's that quote that we've heard, you know, for a couple of decades that you and I mentioned, where it's like you're giving someone else a cup of poison, or, excuse me, you're drinking a cup of poison yourself and you're expecting the other person to die. It makes no sense. So what he was saying in those two commandments was so much deeper and also so much more not challenging, but it takes a true, absolute commitment with all of your heart, all of your mind, all of your soul, all of your everything that you have. It's an absolute commitment. It's not about quoting verses from a Bible that's been incredibly mistranslated and using those as weapons. It's actually stopping eating your own stuff. This is the way I've been explaining it lately. Eating whatever it is that's coming up for you and being able to be present regardless of the situation. The candle flame that never flickers, though the worst goes before it. And it may not be flickering, not because you're trying to resist, but because you're allowing yourself to be open. When you actually let go, that's when the strength of the one can birth through you. And it was so much more than that surface level of what we were told. And that's just the Matthew version there. And the other two are pretty much the same thing, just in different forms. So I get a little bit excited about that.
I hear Dale. One of the things I talk about often, remind people of often, is Vladimir Lenin said in his writing as he formed the whole communist philosophy, that the way to destroy a culture was to change the meaning of its words. Mm. And that word love, we've been taught, is something that we do to each other. And so it's thought of as, well, you're going to do something to love your neighbor, you're going to do something to love God. But my take would be that if we get back to the question that we asked at the opening of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, how many have ever held a newborn child? And describe the essence of the child, and the child is not loving, but is the presence of love, is the fact of love. It's a noun, it's not a verb. And what I hear Yeshua doing in this passage is telling us to...
Michael, you just disappeared. Michael, if you're still with us, we can't hear you.
That's how you hook people to tune into the show tomorrow.
Ah!
Is that how you do it?
Here's the total secret to life and health and prosperity, and all you have to do is...
And he just did it.
He did it. So, Dale, have you ever been through the Way of Mastery?
With Jam? No, I haven't, no.
Well, that's another one of those things where it's so many layers to it that the woman who introduced me to it dropped her body the Sunday before last. So I've been going through it again in her honor. And I was driving this morning listening to that, and this piece just clicked in at a whole new level. And I've probably listened to it 30 times, read it or listened to it 30 different times. And that's, I'm going to be going back and listening to this show many times because there's so much in what you said. Even though bits and pieces of it I've heard from your different talks, it's just striking me differently today. So thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. And I would love to help JM in his work, especially with the Aramaic, because I get his emails and I've got some of his DVDs and things, and he... I love his work. It's amazing. But unfortunately, he gets a lot of things wrong with the Aramaic. He puts the wrong, like, he'll use the wrong words in a lot of cases. Like, he'll actually use an Aramaic word that means the opposite of what he's saying. And I've extended my hand out. I've messaged through their website and a bazillion times, and then I just sort of let go. I thought maybe he didn't want the help. I don't know, but maybe the message hasn't gotten to him. But I'd love to be able to help him out with anything he needed in terms of translation to make sure that it was accurate. Because unfortunately what will happen is people will miss the work thinking that he doesn't know what he's talking about, but he does know what he's talking about. You know, just because he's getting the Aramaic words wrong doesn't mean that what he's saying isn't valid, because I love what he's doing.
Well, and that's part of what I'm talking about, and I think Michael doesn't get into it for the same reason, because there, you know, this work was ostensibly channeled through Yeam, and as I listen, it's just, it's like your work and Michael's and Guy Finley's stuff, it just flows, and this is the only book I've ever picked up, aside from maybe a Krishnamurti book, that strikes me as a fractal.
Mm,
and so within the first chapter, as I go back and listen to it the 30th or 40th time, I'm listening to a line and I say, wait a minute, that's the key of lesson 9. Wait a minute, that's lesson 14. That comes right out of lesson 4. I'm in lesson, the third lesson, and I'm hearing stuff from the 23rd lesson. So it's just a beautiful piece of work. It's separate from this other stuff that he's doing now where he's trying to interpret from the ancient Aramaic. So that, to my mind, the Way of Mastery, or the three books, he has said they were never intended to be put together. The Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, and the Way of Knowing were intended to be three separate works, and you master one before going on to the other. And the point of the whole process is to birth the mind of Christ within yourself.
Exactly, yeah.
And I apologize for my phone cutting out, but the point I was making is ties right into what you just said, Tim, and that is that it's not only birthing the mind of Christ, it is rebirthing or bringing back into expression through the form the original state of being, which is love, the noun. We are love, and so it's not Yeshua saying, well, you should love that, you should verb that person, you should love that person, but rather you gather your own human essence in your own human life, and you live as that in the presence of any thought or feeling you have about the Creator and any thought or feeling you have about neighbor. And when you are able to do that, then you have preserved or brought self, the truth of who you are, love, into full expression. And that then we move in the direction of, and maybe because of time, we're getting short on time, but perhaps, Dale, we could start off next time we do. You know, we can just make some notes, and, you know, at some point in the future, if we do some more Aramaic Fridays, we can look at, for upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. Unless you've got a short thought you can give us on that, but to me it's about, here he's saying is, live your human beingness in the presence of whatever you face in your human life. And then
exactly.
If you look at the book, at the scriptures, then on that hangs the true understanding of what was really being said. Any quick thoughts on that? Because we're down to just a few minutes.
Well, in terms of that word prophet in Aramaic, anbiya or nabiyat, means an open channel. It's a channel of God, not necessarily a foreseer of the future, but the one who is an open vessel. Their light shines through rather than the bushel basket. And in terms of the subject, too, you mentioned, so I thought, yeah, maybe I could come back maybe in a year or so and we could do this again. Or there's another option to it. People are waiting for me to make an announcement, and the other option to that
maybe we could do one more week next week?
Yeah, we could do one more week, or we can do the entire year. The big announcement is that I'm going to be here with Michael every single Friday for the entirety of 2014.
Yay!
On every Friday.
Wow.
And that means we'll be able to tell everybody and we'll be able to promote it. And not only Friday, but all of the shows that Michael's doing with such a commitment, and be able to have it on a regular basis. We can get into deeper subjects. We can answer more questions that people may have and not feel like we're trying to fit it into 5 weeks, because we've got a whole year to do it. And I'm excited to say
awesome.
It feels great.
Awesome. Yeah. Hey, I'm on the team for that one.
So a whole year, every single Friday, let everybody know on Aramaic Fridays I'll be here. And I'll occasionally, we can have, you know, some of the other Aramaic people call in or something, see where we go with it. And I think it's going to be amazing. And we can just keep the conversation moving forward.
Now, when you say every single Friday, are we going to do Married Fridays too?
I'll think about that one. I haven't committed to the Married Fridays yet, so I got to figure out which ones are married first. So,
well, that's awesome, Dale. We are just
I am so delighted and so appreciative that you're willing to step up to the plate and offer that level of support. You know, what, to me, one of the blessings of having kind of locked into this radio show is that in the years we've done this work, if we went to a city and the support group didn't get started, you know, it wasn't long people would lose the work because it's so counter, as you say, counter conditioning. And so the blessing to me of us being able to offer support to anyone on the globe, all they have to do is have a computer, even if they don't have a phone, that they can get on their computers, they can listen, they can ask their questions in the chat room. To me, it's made every minute that it takes for us. And, you know, we've done radio shows from McDonald's parking lots. We've called Tim at the last second, and he's dialed in and started the show, and we weren't able to get to a connection. And, you know, 5 minutes into the show, we show up, or 45 minutes into the show. But the reason for being committed is to create a space of support so that anybody on the planet is supported. Anybody who wants to move forward in this work can freely do so, that the material's there, and we're here to refine and answer questions, and it's awesome that you're willing to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm honored. I'm honored to even be asked. So, yeah. I really feel also that 2014, this is the year for us where the rubber really hits the road. It's time to really live it, not talk about it, not just talk about living it, not just talking about what we understand about it, but actually putting it into practice and showing it through our lives. And to me, this is a part of that. So,
exactly. Very cool. Well, then on Friday, next Friday, then we'll take the second half of that quote from the Aramaic perspective. For upon this, the condition of being love hangs the understanding of the law and the prophets. So that'll be a great thing to look forward to, and we appreciate everybody that's here. I think we're down to about a minute or so, and so we'll just make an announcement or two, and that is that if you want to understand more about what Dale's doing, access more of his material, order his materials, or be on his mailing list, you can go to his website, which is www.daleellenhoffman.com, and or you can just type in Hoffman Aramaic, and you'll be right there with him. He's got lots of videos on his YouTube channel. We've also got, under Planetary Healing, several videos, and thanks to Dale, because Dale was the one who edited and put those things up on YouTube, so there are a bunch of videos you can watch there. You can also go to our website. We are going to be doing a 9-day intensive in Costa Rica in March, the 7th through the 15th. So anyone who wants to come down and join us in Costa Rica, our Food Fund Forgiveness and Work Project starts, and we're out of time. So have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Blessings.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.